Hello and welcome to Paul Martin's Audiobooks and Ideas. Today I'm talking about a crime that has probably fascinated people more than any other one, and that is the murder spree of Jack the Ripper in 1888 in England, in London's suburb of Whitechapel. It certainly wasn't the worst crimes ever committed. There were murderers such as H.H. Holmes, who killed a lot more people and with more sadism. But it seems to be with unsolved mysteries, they fascinate people more than anything. And the question is, who was Jack the Ripper? Who were his victims? And it opens us up to a world that would largely be forgotten if it were not for this unsolved mystery. I remember in the early 1990s as a teenager reading about a stabbing of a woman at a circus bike rally in America, and there were several witnesses who saw the assailant. They said he had a pair of jeans on, a black leather jacket, and a beard and sunglasses on. If you know anything about biker rallies, it would seem they had just described about 80% of the men at the rally. What about Jack the Ripper? Can we know who he was and what his motives were? I believe we can get very close to determining who he was, but we can never be 100% certain. So I'm going to talk today about the world in which Jack the Ripper lived, the crimes that were committed, and then we're going to have a look at the suspects. Whitechapel in 1888 was a bit of a horror world to live in. It was nicknamed Hell. They had about a 55% death rate for children before the age of five. And there were thousands of immigrants from other parts of England seeking work, or people from overseas. There were many Jewish immigrants, about 40,000 in London's East End. Many of them had fled pogroms and persecution in their own homelands. Many of them were traumatised and affected. And there were also criminals from all over Europe who fled to London's East End to eke out an existence or flee from the authorities in their own country. In 1888 to 1891, there were 11 unsolved murders of women in the suburb of Whitechapel. Out of these 11, at least five of them are considered to have been done by Jack the Ripper, possibly a few more. And so we're going to look at what happened in this event. The first event was the Ada Wilson stabbing. Was it done by Jack the Ripper? On March the 28th, 1888, at Mile End, which is very close to Whitechapel, Ada Wilson, a 39-year-old dressmaker, answered the door. A man knocked. And a man who was about 30 years old, 5'6", a fair moustache and a sunburnt face, threatened to kill her if she didn't give him money. She refused, so he stabbed her twice in the throat with a clasp knife. She screamed, the man ran off, a neighbour rescued her, took her to the hospital, and miraculously, she survived. Did she encounter Jack the Ripper or someone like him? A little while later, on the 3rd of April, 1888, an alcoholic woman who lived on the streets, Emma Elizabeth Smith, who was 45 years old, was physically and sexually assaulted by two or three men. One was said to be a teenager. She had her vagina ruptured and her The lines inside the abdomen and internal organs were also greatly harmed. She was in a very bad state. She was left for hours on the street. She was found and taken into a hospital. And she planned to give a statement to the police the following morning. The following morning, unfortunately, she was dead. That was the first Whitechapel murder. And then a while later, on Tuesday, August the 2nd, Martha Tabram, a 39-year-old prostitute, was murdered at 2:30 a.m. She was stabbed 39 times in the neck, torso, and genitals with a short blade. She was said to have been with her friend, Mary Ann Connolly, who was nicknamed Pearly Pole. And the two of them are hooked up with these two soldiers and went down the street after drinking with them for sex. However, there were witnesses that actually saw Martha Tabram walking alone. And later on, her body was found. She was murdered at 2:30 a.m. At the time of her murder, neighbours heard a scream of murder, but they did nothing because that was a nightly occurrence in this environment of domestic violence. At 3:30 a.m., a cab driver saw her body lying on a flight of stairs. It wasn't until about 5 a.m. that a labourer called John Saunders Reeve looked and saw that her body was dead. And she was lying on her back and her dress was lifted up over to expose her private area. And this murder got a lot of publicity, more than the first one of Emma Elizabeth Smith. And then a short while later, on Friday, the 31st of August, 1888, Mary Ann Nichols, a street woman who was 43 years old, was found murdered. Her abdomen was mutilated. She was lying on the street on her back, and she'd had a deep, jagged cut. Her body was found by Charles Cross. He was a meat delivery driver at 3:45 a.m. And it's believed her death had been around 3 a.m. Many of the people in Whitechapel lived in what were called doss houses, where they'd pay a small amount of money to live in these very terrible substandard living conditions. And so on Saturday, the 8th of September, 1888, Annie Chapman, who was 47 years old, left her lodgings to get rent money. And her body was found near a doorway. Her throat was cut from left to right. She was disemboweled and her intestines were thrown out and part of her uterus was missing. Her body was found at 6 a.m. and there were anti-Semitic demonstrations that followed. Then on the 27th of September, there was the Dear Boss letter. It was given to the central news agency where the media would publicise it. It's believed that if it was written by Jack the Ripper himself, it would have been given to the police or somewhere else. So a lot of people believe the Dear Boss letter was a hoax. It may or may not have been written by Jack the Ripper himself, but it said, "Dear Boss, I keep on hearing the police have caught me, but they won't fix me just yet. I have laughed when they look so clever and talk about me being on the right track. That joke about leather apron gave me real fits. I am down on whores and I shan't quit ripping them till I do get buckled. Grand work the last job was. I gave the lady no time to squeal. How can they catch me now? I love my work and want to start again. You will soon hear of me with my funny little games. I saved some of the proper red stuff in the ginger beer bottle over the last job to write with, but it went thick like glue and I can't use it. Red ink is fit enough, I hope. Ha ha. The next job I do, I shall clip the lady's ears off and send to the police officers just for jolly, wouldn't you? Keep this letter back till I do a bit more work, then give it out straight. My knife's so nice and sharp. I want to get to work right away if I get a chance. Good luck. Yours truly, Jack the Ripper. Don't mind me giving the trade name. P.S. Wasn't good enough to post this before I get all the red ink off my hands. Curse it. No luck yet. They say I'm a doctor now. Ha ha. And that's the end of that letter. Then we have what was referred to as the double murder event. And several eyewitnesses saw Elizabeth Stride, a woman who was a con artist and a prostitute at times and scam artists. On Sunday the 30th of September, she was found freshly killed at about 1 a.m. in Dutfield's yard, unmutilated, still bleeding, and her body was still warm. So she was near the this Jewish socialist club, and a man in a cart came in and found her body where she had just been killed. There were several eyewitnesses that saw a man with a mustache, dark hair and a dark coat and hat with her in the lead up to this murder. Then at 1:45 a.m. in Mitre Square, which was a 15-minute walk away from Stride's murder scene, Catherine Eddowes, a 46-year-old street woman and possible prostitute, was found mutilated. Her body was found with her abdomen mutilated, her intestines thrown out, and her left kidney and most of her uterus was removed. And then very shortly after, a postcard was sent called the Saucy Jack Postcard. With these letters by Jack the Ripper, we're not 100% certain that he wrote them, but at face value, we can either believe it or not. But here's what it said. I was not codding, dear old boss, when I gave you the tip. You'll hear about Saucy Jackie's work tomorrow. Double event this time. Number one squealed a bit, couldn't finish straight off. Ha! Not the time to get ears for police. Thanks for keeping last letter back till I got to work again. Jack the Ripper. Those who say it's authentic point out that it predicts the double event murder happening, and it has a similar style of writing to the Dear Boss letter. So it might be authentic. Another possibility is that someone read the Dear Boss letter and got an early morning newspaper on the double event and then quickly wrote it and posted it. So it might be authentic, but we can't be entirely certain. Then on October the 2nd, an unidentified female torso was found in the basement of New Scotland Yard and two other locations. And this was known as the Whitehall Mystery and the Thames Torso Murders from 1887 to 1888. The torso murders were four women who were brutally mutilated and their bodies, parts of their bodies, were found in the Thames River, and it's an unsolved mystery. Some people have tried to connect them with Jack the Ripper. But the problem is it seems to have been a very different style of murder from the Jack the Ripper killings. And in the Thames torso murders, there was no hacking or mutilation of the genitals region of the women. Due to the Whitechapel murders, a group of vigilantes got together and they patrolled the streets at night to stop Jack the Ripper. They were called the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee. And on October the 16th, there was the From Hell postcard which was sent, in along with a cardboard box, and it was sent to Mr. Lusk, who was the head of the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee. And it was a box that had a human kidney preserved in alcohol. Now, Catherine Eddowes was the one who'd been mutilated, and her left kidney and most of her uterus was removed. And in the From Hell letter, it says, "From Hell, Mr. Lusk, saw, I send you half the kidney I took from one woman and preserved it from you. Tova piece I fried and ate. It was very nice. I may send you the blood knife that took it out if you only wait a while longer. Signed, Catch Me When You Can, Mr. Lusk." In which he says that he had fried and eaten the other half. This, to me, would seem to have a very strong case of being authentic and written. The thing about this letter, though, is the style of writing is very different from the Dear Boss letter and the Saucy Jack letter. So, and the fact that a human kidney was sent with it gives me the indication, in my personal opinion, that it is authentic. And then we get to the murder of Mary Jane Kelly. So the murders of Mary Ann Nichols, Annie Chapman, Elizabeth Stride, Catherine Eddowes, and Mary Jane Kelly, those five are called the canonical five, the ones that most historians and ripperologists believe were definitely done by Jack the Ripper. There are some opinions that Elizabeth Stride was not done by Jack the Ripper, but someone else, although it's likely that Elizabeth Stride's mutilation was interrupted by the arrival of the cart driver. And then there are some who think Mary Jane Kelly was murdered by someone else because it was a lot more intense and brutal. But of all the five Ripper killings, this was by far the most horrific and horrendous. So Mary Jane Kelly went out, and she had a boyfriend called Joseph Barnett, who was not very happy with her prostitution. Some people have theorised that perhaps he was Jack the Ripper and he went and murdered these other women to scare Mary Jane Kelly out of her profession. Others believe it might have been George Hutchison. George Hutchison was an unemployed man who was on the streets, and he saw Mary Jane Kelly and spoke to her, and he saw the man that approached her and walked with her into her Doss House room. Some people have thought maybe he made that up as a cover story. But both Joseph Barnett and George Hutchison were cleared of any suspicions. But she went away with a man in a long black suit. He had a thick moustache that curled at the end. And he was last seen with her. George Hutchison last saw her at 2 a.m. in the morning, and he waited outside of her Doss House It must have been something that really creeped him out about this man she was going with, and after about 45 minutes, he moved on. After about 3:30 a.m., one of the neighbours woke up and heard the clock chime, which was shortly before 4 a.m., and she heard a scream like that of a young woman who screamed out, "Murder!" And another one in a room above Kelly's, Elizabeth Prater was awakened by a little black kitten that walked across her neck, and she too heard a cry of, "Oh, murder!" in a faint voice. But of course they didn't do anything, because screams like that at night were fairly common. And then at 10:30 a.m., the landlord's agent went to look in her room, because she was well overdue for several weeks worth of rent that she hadn't paid. And they found her body was horribly gutted, her breasts were cut off, her throat was slashed, her face was mutilated, her thighs had been cut to the bone. And it was determined that she'd died around 3:30 to 4 a.m. And this was the last of the canonical Jack the Ripper killings. Then on Thursday, the 20th of December, 1888, Rose Milet, a 26-year-old prostitute, was found strangled. And four doctors studied her body, and they concluded that it was murder. But some investigator of the police argued that she might have accidentally hanged herself while drunk. However, the police verdict that it might have been accidental may have been due to the fact that police were greatly ridiculed by the public for their inability to find out who was Jack the Ripper and catch the culprit. Then there was another stabbing, which may or may not have been done by Jack the Ripper, in which a prostitute by the name of Annie Farmer, on the 21st of November 1888, she says she met this shabby genteel man and went into his doss house. It was also the same doss house that had been the home of Martha Tabram. And then the man screamed out an expletive of, "What a cow!" And the woman inside the house had been stabbed in the throat. Her stab was not a very sharp, deep stab, and she survived it, but she claims she had been attacked by Jack the Ripper. The police suspected that maybe he wasn't Jack the Ripper and she had robbed him of his money, but the Annie Farmer never changed her story to the day she died. So she may have had an actual encounter with the culprit or one of the Whitechapel murderers. The next one came a good while later, on Wednesday the 17th of July 1889, in which Alice McKenzie, a 40-year-old woman, was murdered at about 12:40 a.m., in which her throat was cut and wounds to her abdomen. It was done with a shorter blade than the one used by Jack the Ripper, although it was likely, in my opinion, a victim of Jack the Ripper, or possibly someone who was imitating him. Then there was nothing again until Tuesday the 10th of September 1889 at 5:15 a.m. The torso of a woman was discovered. It was called the Pinchin Street torso. It was of a woman that was about 30 to 40 years of age, badly beaten, and had been killed the day before. Her body was also badly mutilated, but her genitals were unharmed, which would be very uncharacteristic of Jack the Ripper. So it was possibly connected with Jack the Ripper or the Battersea Mystery from 1873 to 74. and that's where a mutilated woman's body parts were found. Then there was the Tottenham Court Road mystery, and that was in 1884, in which a part of a woman's skull and flesh attached to it was, and a chunk of her thigh bone was found. So that may have been connected with those murders, but not necessarily with Jack the Ripper. And then finally we get to the last of the Whitechapel murders. And that was a good while again. On the 13th of February 1891, on a Friday, in which Frances Coles, a street woman and prostitute, was violently thrown to the ground. Her throat was cut, and a killer fled almost immediately as a policeman approached. She was still alive, but she died before the doctor could arrive. The man who was seen with her that night was her boyfriend, James Sadler. He was a sailor, and he was arrested and charged with the murder, but they had no evidence against him. He was found bruised and bleeding on that night, which again seems to implicate him. However, that could all be accounted for. At the time that the murder was taking place, he was seen by witnesses elsewhere in London, and he tried that evening to get aboard a ship, but the sailors refused because he was drunk and they bashed him up. So that's why he was bruised and bleeding, and he was too drunk to have committed a murder like that. So he was cleared of all charges. It was also found through records that James Sadler was overseas at the time that the Ripper killings were taking place. So he was cleared as a suspect. So when we get to the descriptions, they were often very different of Jack the Ripper. At the death of Annie Chapman, a witness, Elizabeth Long, saw the victim with a man who was over 40, of dark complexion, foreign appearance, shabby, genteel appearance, talking to her. He had a dark overcoat and a deer hunting hat. He was about 5'2" and had a foreign accent. At the death of Elizabeth Stride, a man was seen with her who was 5'7", not stout, and she said, "No, not tonight," and he was carrying a bag. The man fought with her. He was a broad-shouldered man, fair complexion, brown moustache, brown hair. And he yelled out Lipsky to some Jew who observed their scuffle, and the Jewish guy ran off. And then shortly after that time, she was found murdered. Now, when he said Lipsky, it was a reference to a Jewish murder that had happened recently. It's not known whether he was insulting the Jewish man or whether he was Jewish or what exactly that was meant. Then there was George Hutchison, who saw the last person with Mary Jane Kelly when she was seen alive at 2 a.m. He says he was about 35 years old, 5'6", pale complexion, dark hair, dark eyelashes, slight moustache, curled at each end, and a surly Jewish-looking man with a dark suit and respectable-looking. And so can we know, therefore, anything about Jack the Ripper? We have descriptions that may or may not have been the Ripper, or may not have been the last person seen with them. It seems to be that he was male, possibly foreign, and a local to Whitechapel. So he's someone who had settled in the area. He's someone who didn't like to travel far distances. He was familiar with his area. And he was someone who had basic medical knowledge. He knew how to cut a throat and leave minimal blood stains. The question is, if Jack the Ripper murdered two women in a single night, then he killed Mary Jane Kelly and he went absolutely insane in hacking her body to pieces, Why was there a 7-month drought in Ripper murders from November 1888 until July 1889? And it means, therefore, either the Ripper was dead or incarcerated. Also, a reason is that Queen Victoria beefed up police activity after Mary Jane Kelly's murder, so it would have been harder to do. And even the next likely Ripper killing, Alice Mackenzie, was done at incredible risk, where the culprit was very close to being captured. Another possibility is that murders really did occur, but they didn't get discovered. For example, we know that Mary Jane Kelly was murdered because she was murdered in a public doss house, and the landlord had to find out when she was paying her rent. But what if that prostitute had gone back to a man's private home and he had murdered her there and disposed of her body? The thing about Whitechapel is it was a highly chaotic, overcrowded, transient neighbourhood where people came and went. And if someone disappeared and had been murdered, people wouldn't necessarily know whether they had been killed or they'd simply moved elsewhere. So it wouldn't have aroused a great deal of suspicion. What we can conclude about Jack the Ripper, we're uncertain who he or possibly she was. There are some people who think it may have been a woman. We don't know if he wrote all or any of those Ripper letters. We don't know which women were his victims and which ones were not. And we don't know if Jack the Ripper was one of the suspects listed that we're going to look at, or simply an unknown individual who fell through the cracks. What we are certain of is that at least 11 women were killed in unsolved murders from 1888 to 91 in Whitechapel by one or more highly disturbed, violent individuals. And we know of several violent, psychiatrically or criminally disturbed people who prowled the streets of Whitechapel at the time. What we do learn from the Jack the Ripper mystery is the unsolvable nature of this mystery is what accounts for its intrigue and interest and fascination. It also gives us an insight into the lives of people at the bottom rungs of society that history would otherwise have never cared about. Often when we learn about history at the time, people study those at the top, people like Queen Victoria or Kaiser Wilhelm or people like that. But instead, we learn about people who were eking out an existence, and it helps us appreciate what they went through. We learn about their tenacious struggle to survive and to enjoy life, and it puts most modern people like us to shame. So before we look at the suspects, I'm just going to look at a few things. Can the Jack the Ripper murders ever be solved? Well, it's unlikely. From 1888 to 1891, with each passing year, we get further away from these events. And many pieces of evidence that would be needed to solve this case are now lost or erased or were never there to begin with. In 1940, during the Battle of Britain, Germany bombed London and many of the police buildings that housed the files that hadn't been looked at on Jack the Ripper were burned and destroyed forever. And also a problem with finding out about Jack the Ripper is where the crimes were committed. They were at a chaotic, highly transient area of London where both the killer and the evidence was likely erased and or contaminated shortly after it had occurred. There was also a 100-year gag on information from 1888 to 1988, which stifled many potential sleuths and leads that might have solved the case. And there was also the inundation of rumours, conspiracies and false leads given by members of the public that they gave to the police a lot of false and useless information. So the problem with solving this is not that there's not enough suspects, but that there's too many to choose from. So even if we were to correctly guess or come across some written confession, etc., it's impossible to be certain that we have Jack the Ripper. The real killer may or may not have confessed to it, and some people may have lied about being Jack the Ripper. A 1988 criminal profile on Jack the Ripper by an FBI study said that he was likely a white male from a broken home life and possibly an alcoholic mother. They reckon he would have been a menial labourer rather than a skilled professional. They think he would have been a loner who spent long periods of time in solitude, socially inept, and a resident of Whitechapel. So I've put the suspects into three categories. The first is the unlikely suspects, ones that are very popular, ones that people say, yes, this was Jack the Ripper, but it's been utterly debunked, or it simply has no evidence. So the first is the unlikely suspects. The second is the possible suspects, ones where they might have been Jack the Ripper, but there simply isn't enough evidence to believe it was him. And then the third category is the likely suspects, the ones that I think definitely could be Jack the Ripper. So out of the unlikely suspects, the first I'm going to look at is H.H. Holmes. H.H. Holmes was a serial killer. Dr. Henry Howard Holmes was an American doctor based in Chicago. He murdered anything from 10 to 235 victims. He was an expert at stripping the bodies of flesh and dissolving them with acid. He was executed by hanging. His great-great-grandson, Jeff Mudgett, who's a lawyer, claims that he was Jack the Ripper. He looks that his handwriting matches one of the Ripper letters. However, handwriting was often highly standardised in those days. There's also no evidence that he was in England during the Ripper killings. He published a confession before his execution in 1896, which did not involve saying he was Jack the Ripper. He also conceived his daughter in America in October 1888, when the Ripper killings were taking place, and he was battling lawsuits for unpaid bills during the autumn of 1888, and he fled to New Hampshire and New York. So H.H. Holmes, a man who, in my opinion, was far more evil than Jack the Ripper, has to be dismissed as a suspect. The next is Lewis Carroll. Lewis Carroll, who died in 1898, was the author of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. And Richard Wallace wrote a 1996 book claiming to find double meanings in Alice's Adventures in Wonderland as proof that he was Jack the Ripper by completely changing the meanings. Not only is this pretty absurd and pretty laughable, but from August the 31st to September the 30th, 1888, when four of the five canonical victims of Jack the Ripper were killed, Carroll was on vacation in Eastbourne. And Carroll was in Oxford at the time of Mary Jane Kelly's murder. So that has to be dismissed. The next is James Maybrick. Maybrick was a cotton merchant who was murdered by his wife Florence on the 11th of May 1889 at the age of 50. There were no suspicions at all of him being Jack the Ripper during his lifetime. It wasn't until 1992 that one Michael Barrett produced an alleged diary of this man admitting he was Jack the Ripper. Now, he claimed that this diary was given to him by a friend at a pub who was now unable to be contacted. His wife, however, contradicted him and said that it had been in her family as long as she could remember. The diary itself dated back to the 19th century, but the writing in it did not. They did tests on the diary and they found it had the preservative chloroacetamide in the ink, which was not commercially available until 1972. Then, in January 1995, Michael Barrett made two sworn affidavits that he had written the diary and it was dictated by his wife. Now, when someone confesses to a scam, they should be given some credibility for honesty. But when they take back that confession and retract it, they should have no credibility whatsoever. And his lawyer then advised him to retract his confession. So after this scam of a diary had been written, in 1992, very mysteriously the following year, in 1993, a watch that dated back to the 1840s surfaced and it had J. Maybrick on the inside and I Am Jack and the initials of the five victims inscribed. But scientific analysis could not confirm or deny its antiquity of the writing. So it's just to me a remarkable coincidence that a fraudulent diary would be written around the same time that a mysterious watch surfaces that cannot be proven. The next one we get to is Prince Albert Victor. He was the Duke of Clarence and Avondale, and he was the grandson of the reigning Queen Victoria, and he was second in line to the British throne. A lot of people love to fetishise the royal family and imagine all sorts of absurd conspiracy theories. Well, it was a novel idea that was invented in 1962. The prince's physician, Sir William Gull, found the prince had syphilis. Now, he might have gotten syphilis from prostitutes, but that's a bit of a stretch to claim he must have therefore been the Ripper. Prince Albert wasn't even in London when most of the Ripper killings took place. And Sir William Gull, who has also been suspected of being Jack the Ripper, had had a stroke around this time, so he would have been totally incapable of committing these murders. The next one we come to is Michael Ostrog. He was born in 1833 and he died sometime after 1904. He was listed as a likely suspect in 1894 along with Aaron Kosminski and Montague Druitt. He was guilty of theft, robbery, scams and fraud, but he was never found guilty of murder. And he was in prison in France in 1888 when the Ripper murders took place. So even though he was listed as a major suspect, we can see clearly the police were utterly wrong. The next one we get to is Thomas Neil Crean. From 1850 to 1892, he was a Scottish-Canadian doctor and a serial killer. In Chicago, he offered abortions to prostitutes. He murdered several prostitutes. He visited Whitechapel in 1891 after hearing about the Ripper killings, so he admired Jack the Ripper. He was convicted of murder in 1892. And his last words, which he's supposed to have said, were, "I am Jack the," and then he choked, which has led many people to say he was Jack the Ripper. The problem is that records show he was in prison in Illinois, America, at the time of the Ripper killings. So it's simply not possible. He clearly was a man of the same caliber and ruthlessness as Jack the Ripper, but it's impossible. But there are still conspiracy theorists who come up with crazy ideas, and they claim that maybe he found a lookalike to go to prison on his behalf and then he went and did it. I think it's a lot more simpler to just accept that he wasn't Jack the Ripper, and maybe it was done by someone who actually knew Whitechapel well, not a visitor. The next one we get to is Walter Sickert. He lived from 1860 to 1942. He was an artist and a womaniser who was fascinated by Jack the Ripper. He stayed in a room that the landlady claims Jack the Ripper had allegedly stayed in, and so he did a painting of it and he called it Jack the Ripper's Bedroom. There was no one who seriously suspected him of being the Ripper until a 1958 book came out, and then in the 1970s a few more people came out with this claim. Patricia Cornwell in 2002 wrote a book called Portrait of a Killer, Jack the Ripper Case Closed, in which she claims he definitely was the Ripper. And she claims he was impotent and he used his rage from being impotent to go out and kill these women. The problem is that Walter Sickert was not impotent. His wife filed for divorce because of his adultery. And during 1888, he spent most of his time outside Britain. So it simply is not possible. We also mentioned before James Sadler, who was accused of the last Whitechapel murder victim. But he was cleared of that. He was accounted for at the time of her murder, of Frances Coles. And he was also overseas at the times of the other murders. So that does not fit. The next man in the list of unlikely suspects was John Pizer, who was often nicknamed Leather Apron. He lived from 1850 to 1897. He was a Polish Jewish bootmaker in Whitechapel. Many locals suspected him of being the Ripper. He had a stabbing conviction against him. Police believed he had assaulted many prostitutes. He was arrested after the killings of Nichols and Annie Chapman, but he had solid alibis. And the policeman who arrested him was a friend of his. Again, that is suspicious, but he was seen by a policeman at the time that one of the murders was actually taking place. So, on lack of evidence and solid alibis, John Pizer has to be dismissed from the list. The next man on the list is Francis Tumbledee. He was an American quack doctor and he was charged with the death of patients in 1865. And he was charged with complicity in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, but he was released without charges. In England in 1888, on November the 7th, he was charged with homosexual acts. So he fled England back to America. And he was never extradited because they couldn't find a shred of evidence for him being Jack the Ripper. Another reason he and another suspect have to be dismissed, called Montague Druitt, is because they were homosexual. And it's a noted fact that serial killers tend to murder those they're attracted to. So John Wayne Gacy, who was homosexual, killed 33 men and boys. Ted Bundy, who was heterosexual, killed over 30 women. The station strangler in South Africa, Norman Avsel Simons, who was a pedophile, killed 22 boys. So Francis Tumbledee probably does not fit that category anyway. Now we get to the possible suspects. We did mention Joseph Barnett, who lived from 1858 to 1927. He was the lover of Mary Jane Kelly. The theory is that he might have killed her in a jealous rage and previously killed the other victims to scare them out of prostitution. The problem is there's no evidence for this. It's pure speculation. And he was thoroughly questioned and examined by the police at the time and cleared of all wrongdoing. And the police were desperate to catch the Ripper. So if they'd had anything on him, they would have used that against him. The next one is George Hutchison, who saw Mary Jane Kelly with that mysterious man that went into the room with her. He was a worker, a homeless man who was often unemployed, and he described the man who went with her to her room. The claim that he might have actually made that up and gone in and killed her is speculation. It's a made-up story, a smokescreen to hide his own guilt, they claim. But the reality is he was unemployed and broke, so he could not afford a doss house at the time. Kelly was murdered between 3:30 and 4 a.m., long after Hutchison had moved on. Also, there's no evidence connecting him with the murder. The next one we get to is Mary Percy. She lived from 1866 to 1890. A very creepy looking woman. She was the only female listed as a Ripper suspect at the time of the killings. She moved in with a furniture remover called Frank Hogg, who also had another lover, Phoebe Stiles. And Phoebe had a child with Frank. So on the 24th of October 1890, Mary invited Phoebe and her baby to visit her. There was a scream at 4 p.m. Phoebe's skull was crushed and the baby was smothered. She denied her guilt, but she was convicted and hanged. Was she Jill the Ripper? There simply is no evidence that she went out and randomly murdered prostitutes. She did commit a very heinous murder, but it was a crime of passion, and she had a reason to hate Phoebe Stiles. That, of course, does not justify what she did, but it would be a bit of a stretch to then claim without evidence that maybe she did some of the Whitechapel murders. It's possible, but we simply don't know. We do know that she was a murderer and she was a very highly disturbed individual who lived in the Whitechapel area. The next person we get to that's a possible candidate, but we don't know with absolute certainty, is Aaron Kosminski. Now, Aaron Kosminski, in a poll of Ripperologists, got the most votes at about 16%. So a lot of people do believe he definitely was Jack the Ripper. He lived from 1865 to 1919. He was a Polish Jew. He was named a major suspect in 1894. And according to a police report, there was a Jew who identified him as the Ripper but refused to testify against a fellow Jew. This is in Sir Robert Anderson's memoirs. He then claims that Aaron Kosminski was arrested in early 1889 and thrown into a mental hospital, and he died there from rage and mania 9 months later. The problem with that story, my friends, is it's not true, because that's not what happened to Aaron Kosminski. He was arrested in 1891, 2 years after this had happened and more than a year after this inmate had died. And he didn't die until 1919 at about the age of 53. And when he was in the mental hospital, he very rarely acted in a violent way. He did suffer from auditory hallucinations, paranoia. He refused to wash, and he had a bit of a problem with masturbation, apparently. He threatened his own sister with the knife. He was a barber or hairdresser, and he was incarcerated in this mental institution. The problem is his name was actually confused with an individual called Nathan Kaminsky, also dubbed David Cohen. This Kaminsky was arrested in 1889 and died 9 months later, so it appears to be mistaken identity. Nevertheless, a 2014 DNA study on Catherine Eddowes' shawl was matched to her descendants through the blood that was on the shawl. The semen was matched to Kaminsky's relatives. That sounds like an open and shut case. Unfortunately, it's not, because the DNA that matched Kaminsky is found in 10% of the male population, which makes those results worthless. They did surveillance on him as well, the police apparently, and they found him not murdering anyone. So it seems he was a harmless man who was confused with a far more likely Ripper candidate. The last of the possible suspects is Charles Cross, whose real name was Charles Lechmere. He lived from 1849 to 1920. He was a meat cart driver who discovered the body of the first canonical victim, Mary Ann Nichols. And in a documentary called Jack the Ripper, The Missing Evidence, 2014, it points out that he was from a broken home he was raised in. And so he does fit the character traits of the Ripper profile. It's theorised that he was about to mutilate Nichols, and he had been with the body longer than he told the witnesses. And he was the man that saw the body and ran over and said, "Look, there's murder," as these men were approaching. He was a local whose delivery routine coincides with the times and places of the Ripper murders, as well as Tabram's and a couple of others. If he was a meat cart driver, then he would be familiar with chopping up bodies and meat. Also, he used dishonesty when he called himself Charles Cross, because that was not his surname. He gave that to the police. That was his stepfather's surname, which he never used. It's possible that he was innocent and he was afraid of being accused falsely, so he lied. But that's only one possibility. The double event murder was on his night off work, which was a Saturday, and the night of Mary Jane Kelly's death was a public holiday, so he may not have been working. So we can't say that he definitely was the Ripper, but we can't entirely rule it out either. And there is just one more possible candidate, and that is Montague John Druitt. Montague John Druitt lived from 1857 to 1888. He was a lawyer, a boys' school teacher, and a player of rugby and cricket. He mysteriously was dismissed for unknown reasons from the boys' school on early December 1888. He was found drowned in the Thames River on December the 31st, and they found a suicide note that surfaced that was written to his brother. His family had a history of suicide and mental illnesses. There were rumours that surfaced after Kelly's murder that Jack the Ripper had drowned in the River Thames, and Farquharson publicly declared in 1891 that Jack the Ripper was a surgeon's son and had committed suicide after Kelly's murder. There were several journalists and politicians who named him as Jack the Ripper, and the police received private information that convinced them that it was him. So that seems to be a strong bit of evidence against him. However, The problem is the information the police had, they also suspected Michael Ostrog of being the Ripper, and we've shown he was in prison in France at the time, so they got that wrong. And Aaron Kosminski was also a suspect, even though the facts don't line up with him. Instead, it was a Nathan Kosminski who was more likely a suspect than him. They said that Druitt was a doctor who died at the age of 41 by jumping into the Thames River. This is what the police said. They were wrong. He was actually 31 years old, and he wasn't a doctor. He was a barrister and an assistant school teacher. So if they could get these basic facts about him wrong, how many other facts did they get correct on him? And can we take seriously the claim that he was Jack the Ripper? Now that we've looked at possible suspects, now I'm going to look at, in what my opinion, are the likely suspects. This is not in any particular order, and I'll let you, the listener, decide for yourself who you think Jack the Ripper was. So I'm going to look at Nathan Kosminski. He was a Polish Jew who was rumoured to be Leather Apron. He was a violent, dangerous sex maniac who attacked prostitutes. He was thrown into a mental asylum in around December 1888 and died 9 months later. He was identified by a witness as Jack the Ripper. And since the person didn't want to go to court and press charges against him, the police didn't want to release him either, so they threw him into a mental hospital. His identity, therefore, was mistaken with Kosminski, being a similar-sounding name. And in the asylum, he was very violent. He had to be restrained and force-fed. He died from exhaustion of mania in October 1889. So, in my opinion, he's a likely suspect. He may well have been the Ripper. The next one is William Henry Bury. He lived from 1859 to 1889. He was a Scotsman who moved to London in 1887 and married Ellen Elliott, an alleged prostitute. In January 1889, they moved to Dundee, Scotland. He strangled his wife and mutilated her body, and he told the police it was a suicide. The police charged him with murder and accused him of being Jack the Ripper. He denied being the Ripper, but he confessed to murdering his wife. He was hanged for murder. He threatened his wife with a knife in Whitechapel and was frequently violent and drunk there. He panicked when a friend mentioned Jack the Ripper, and he acted strangely. In his house, there was chalk graffiti that stated, "Jack the Ripper is at the back of this door," and "Jack the Ripper is in this cellar." His wife, when in Dundee, told neighbours Jack the Ripper was taking a rest. Now, if he denied being Jack the Ripper, it's unlikely that he would have written in chalk that he was Jack the Ripper. It sounds to me like either he was Jack the Ripper and his wife knew it, or his wife believed it and had reason to believe it. He was a violent, sadistic murderer, and he had no qualms about mutilating a woman's body. So, in my opinion, he is a very likely candidate. The next one on my list of likely candidates was Jacob Levi. From 1856 to 1891 he lived. He was a butcher who lived in Whitechapel in 1888, close to where Catherine Eddowes was killed. He had psychosis as a result from syphilis, And syphilis, being a sexually transmitted disease, means he may have gotten it from a prostitute and had a reason to hate them. In 1890, he was in a mental asylum and he was frequently restrained due to violent behaviour. And he felt a deep compulsion to act, to do acts of violence against women. And he died in 1891. The next on my list is Thomas Cutbush. He was raised by his mother and auntie, who had mental problems. He showed violent and antisocial behaviour. He was unable to hold down a job. He once pushed an employer down the stairs. He spent a lot of time reading medical books. And at night time, he prowled around Whitechapel, jumping the walls into people's houses with great speed and agility. He lived from 1866 to 1903. He had a paranoid fear that someone was trying to kill him. He's thought to have contracted syphilis from prostitutes in 1888. He became even more eccentric and aggressive after this. He was locked up in an asylum but escaped 4 days later. In 1891, he was found guilty of stabbing 2 women in the buttocks, and he was declared dangerous and psychotic. So Thomas Cutbush was locked up in a mental hospital until he died in 1903. And he often returned home in Whitechapel in 1888, covered in mud and sometimes with blood-stained clothing. Was he Jack the Ripper? Well, he was the nephew of the police superintendent, Charles Henry Cutbush. And the police at the time rubbished the notion that Thomas Cutbush was the Ripper. Perhaps they had a lot of information about the superintendent's nephew to conclude that he wasn't, or possibly they were trying to cover up the embarrassment of having a relative that might have been the Ripper. He certainly was a very disturbed man. He'd studied medical books and he was very prolific at running around Whitechapel, and he had bloodthirsty tendencies. But if he had chopped women up and being Jack the Ripper, why would he go from something as extreme as that to simply stabbing in the buttocks? But the thing is, we don't know the mind of every psychopath, and he may have intended to go further than just stabbing them with mutilation. So I think he remains a likely candidate for Jack the Ripper. The next one is James Kelly. He lived from 1860 to 1929. He was an upholsterer in London. He was abandoned by his mother and raised by his grandmother. He was bad-tempered and abusive to his wife. In 1883, 17 days after getting married, he cut his wife's throat. He would have been hanged, but he was instead sentenced to life in an insane asylum. In January 1888, before the Ripper killings took place, he escaped with a key made from a piece of metal. He was a fugitive for the next few decades, and he finally turned himself into the authorities in 1927. And he died in the mental hospital 2 years later from a double pneumonia. In these last 2 years, he wrote memoirs expressing his great hatred of prostitutes. He acknowledged being in London from August to November 1888, when the Ripper murders were taking place. While he was in America, a number of murders took place bearing a striking resemblance to Jack the Ripper, including Kerry Brown, who was murdered on the 24th of April, 1891. Kerry Brown was a New York prostitute whose body was badly mutilated, and police believed the Ripper had arrived in America because of its similarity. There was a letter to the New York newspaper claiming to be from Jack the Ripper, that he was in America, and there's a documentary on YouTube called Jack the Ripper in America. And they say that he was at different American cities throughout his time abroad, and they coincided with brutal unsolved murders at this place. So that's very suspicious as a candidate for Jack the Ripper. Now we get to Carl Fagenbaum. He lived from about roughly 1840 to 1894. He was a German sailor. He changed his name numerous times. His true identity might never be known. He had a desire to mutilate women. He knew the human anatomy quite well. Fagenbaum was aboard a ship called the Rya, which was docked in London at the time of the murder of Catherine Eddowes, who was very close by at the time. In 1894, he was executed by electric chair in New York for murdering his landlady, Juliana Hoffman, whom he stabbed and cut her throat while her son watched. His lawyer, William Sanford Lawton, said he believed that his client was Jack the Ripper. So that's Carl Fagenbaum. Now I'm getting to the last person. This is the one that I actually am convinced was Jack the Ripper, most likely, in my own personal subjective opinion. And that is George Chapman, or Severin Klosowski. He lived from 1865 to 1903. He was a Polish immigrant who fled his home country for unknown reasons. He was an apprentice to a surgeon and had had about 5 years of experience in this. He's believed to have been an unethical doctor or surgeon in Poland. He arrived in London about 1887, so that was the year before the Whitechapel murders began. He lived in Whitechapel during this whole time. During the night, his wife Lucia said that he frequently disappeared at night, giving no explanation of where he had been or what he had done. He lived close to where most of the Ripper killings took place. In 1891, they migrated to America, which coincides with the end of the Whitechapel murders. He tried to strangle his wife on one occasion, and she found a knife under his pillow, and he said he would cut her head off with it, and she fled back to Britain. He was a very violent and abusive man. He fitted the description of the man last seen with Mary Jane Kelly, and he fitted the description of a man who killed and mutilated Mary Ann Austin in 1901 in the former home of Ripper victim Annie Chapman. And he had the description of the last man seen with Mary Jane Kelly is a dead ringer, in my opinion, for Severin Klosowski or George Chapman. He had about five more de facto wives after Lucia, and in 1902 he was investigated as three of his de facto wives had been poisoned. In 1903, he was charged and sentenced to death by hanging. Was he Jack the Ripper? There are so many things that fit perfectly. His descriptions by eyewitnesses, his location, his character, the fact that he was a convicted serial murderer, The main argument against him being Jack the Ripper is the fact that he was convicted of poisoning women. Would a man who was a maniacal butcherer go back to just poisoning women? Well, both the Ripper's killings and the poisoning are characteristics of someone who had advanced medical knowledge more than the average person. But if he was the Ripper, why would he poison his wives? And the answer is because to the late 19th century, early 20th century mind, a woman who is poisoned does not look as obviously murdered as someone who's been butchered. And if these were his de facto wives, he would be a prime suspect for their murder. It's not the same as butchering a random stranger on the streets of Whitechapel and disappearing into the dark of the night or the early hours of the morning. So it would make sense that if he wanted to butcher random women in the streets, he wouldn't do the same thing with those that he was connected to, that the police would be looking at him for. That's my opinion. So what can we conclude about Jack the Ripper? Here's the last suspect, is that there, Jack the Ripper may have also been someone that we don't know about, someone who slipped through the cracks, someone who was a psychotic murderer, but the authorities or the police did not catch or record such an individual, and such an individual wandered around the streets of Whitechapel. With so many violent, dangerous, and psychiatrically disturbed men and women prowling the streets of Whitechapel, it is surprising that we only know of roughly a dozen murders. There could have been a lot more. So, as I did say before, if the murder of Mary Jane Kelly was only discovered because she owed rent in a public doss house, what if she had gone to a client's private house? How many unaccounted women disappeared from this chaotic, transient neighbourhood? Thank you for listening. Now I'm going to give my sources and recommended reading. The first one is some websites that are very good. Casebook.org has a wealth of information on Jack the Ripper and the possibilities and the suspects. Then there is the jacktherippertour.com. That's a website that gives a lot of helpful information. And the other one is All About History, Jack the Ripper. It's a bookazine, 150 pages, like a magazine, of information, well-researched. It's 2019, edited by Alice Barnes Brown. There are a lot of good documentaries on YouTube as well, some better than others. Some books that are interesting to read to understand the culture and the time. There's a 1911 book called The Lodger about this serial killer in London, and it's based on the Jack the Ripper story. It's 1911 by Marie Adelaide Bellow Downs, and you can get it for free as an audiobook off YouTube. The next one is the 1886 book by Robert Louis Stevenson, Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. 2 years before the Whitechapel murders, there was a book written, a fictional book, about a well-respected, well-loved Dr. Jekyll who transforms into an insane murderer, Mr. Hyde. And it helps understand, while it's fiction, it helps us understand the world of that time. And a very, very good book is also an audiobook on LibriVox, is The People of the Abyss by Jack London. It's a 1903 book by the author of The Call of the Wild on his own actual experiences of Whitechapel itself. While it's written 15 years after the time of Jack the Ripper, not much had changed in that part of the world, and it's a very good insight into it. There are many good podcasts to look at as well. One in particular is Rippercast, your podcast on the Jack the Ripper murders. It's a podcast that has been going since 2008. Another one is called Bad Women, The Ripper Retold by Pushkin Industries. It's by the historian Hayley Rubenhold, which she challenges some of the popular beliefs on Jack the Ripper. She looks more of a focus on the victims of the Whitechapel murders. There's a couple of movies that have been made on Jack the Ripper. They're not very helpful for historical information, but they do introduce you to the world of the time. There's From Hell. It's a 2001 movie that stars Johnny Depp and Heather Graham. It portrays the victims of Jack the Ripper as all being good friends. That's not actually true. They didn't know each other as far as we're aware. They probably crossed paths with each other. And then there is Jack the Ripper, a 1988 miniseries starring Michael Caine, Armand Assante and Jane Seymour. Both From Hell and Jack the Ripper, both of these movies believe that William Gull, the Queen Victoria's surgeon, was Jack the Ripper. But that's utter nonsense, as we discussed before. Another interesting movie is called Bridge Across Time, also known as Terror at London Bridge. It's a 1985 thriller with David Hasselhoff, and it's about an American tourist village that recreates 19th century England, and Jack the Ripper appears there. It's an okay film. I saw it on YouTube. I watched it as an 11-year-old, and it scared the hell out of me. So, thank you for listening. Who do you think was Jack the Ripper? Do your research and give us your conclusions. Thank you for listening.